I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Red Room. So you wanna be a rider, well you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminishing, the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed in the rant room. We let that shit up off our chest. You never have to guess when you're listening to Hillier. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the craft of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want. Welcome to the rant room.
What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest, and you guys are listening to the Screenwriters Rant Room, where we keep it real, we keep it opinionated, we keep it what y'all, 2023. Yeah, on this show, we discuss entertainment, TV, film, music, culture, but our focus is always screenwriting, stories, craft, and shit like that. You can curse on the show. Chris Derrick is out, but we got a dope show for y'all. So if you guys are grown, let's get into the show. So today, let me introduce y'all, some of my dudes in the building.
Hey, everybody.
Exactly. They're back again. The incredible. Raw edible. The incredible. We got my man in the building, Rod Johnson. What's happening?
Hey, everybody. Well, hello, podcast world. It's good to be back on the Screenwriters Rant Room. It's been a minute.
It's been a minute, ain't it? Yeah, like, yeah. It's been a long time. And then we got my dude, Amadou Diallo.
Hey.
Writer himself. Y'all see him out there doing big things, showing off, you know. Letting everybody know I'm on Billions, I'm on this show, I'm on that show. You ain't doing nothing.
I'm back home though. Back home. Yes, dude. Good to be yes. Back home.
You yeah. Back you back in New York?
Yep.
Oh, that's right. Could you went back and now you're back.
Yeah.
Got
back,
it.
Back.
Understood. You sound low to me for some reason. Say something again.
Yeah.
There you
How
go.
How low okay. Can you go?
There you go. All right. Welcome to the show.
Sorry?
Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Indeed. Great to be here as always.
I always feel like, because you were here for a while, I feel like I run into you like all the time, and now like whenever you go home, I always forget
that you're not here. Well, that's the plan. You know, yeah. You kind of try to show your face here enough so people are like, wait a minute,
right.
Is he here or in New York? Or maybe he lives here, or whatever, you know.
And then I want to introduce to the show my man we met last night. We had a lot party here at the studio. And Renee Rodriguez Lopez.
That's me.
Worked in development over at BT here on the. I didn't even know BT was here now.
It's right here, right across
right
the street.
There. That's yeah. The truth. I didn't even realize.
Is that where Showtime?
It's where Showtime is. Oh. Yeah, we share the building.
Ah.
Yeah.
Here I am on the lot. Don't even know. That a bitch. Welcome to the show, Renee.
Thank you for having me on.
Yes, indeed.
Appreciate you.
Indeed. Yeah. So he had a whole bunch of questions for me last night. I was like, you know what? You coming on the show tomorrow. We're just going to talk.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, definitely. Okay, that's better. There we go. It was me. So let's jump into the show. So today, one of the things I want to talk about today, every year on the show, we do an episode where we talk about plans versus the goals.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're called the Rant Room, so we might jump around a little bit in some other shit. But, so let me explain what I mean. So I have this thing, and you know, Rob, we be in the gym.
Yeah.
You know, we take it serious.
No,
it's kind of a lifestyle.
Yeah.
So I've turned it around with the writing in the context of like how we work out. So I look at it like this. Most people who write from a goals point of view. What I mean is they write on a diet.
Mm-hmm.
They don't write on a lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Or a plan. So to me, here's what I mean. A goal to me is a diet, mm-hmm. a diet plan. And a plan to me is a lifestyle. So you live your life a certain way.
Yeah.
So it's consistent, it's constant or whatever. So I was telling you guys before that during the strike, I mean, it was the first time I ever had writer's block. And most of us did for sure. I think you even couldn't write for a minute, right?
Oh, man, don't even ask.
It
like,
was crazy.
Why you got to bring that up? just start the podcast.
He did triggers and shit.
Yeah. No.
I am a writer.
Yeah. I can do this. No, yeah, 100%, 100%. Yeah, I don't mean to cut you off, but yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah, that came... I wouldn't necessarily call it writer's block. It was just kind of like it was really tough to even get myself into a mental state to be prepared to sit down and even and focus on the writing. I had ideas about things I wanted to explore, but so, you know, it was just kind of like getting out there, hitting the strike lines, you know, putting a lot of energy in, shaking a lot of hands, trying to remember everybody, you know, all the different people you're meeting, and you know, and then coming back, decompressing, and trying to sit down and focus on something while your mind is still dealing with sort of like the uncertainty, because that's what a lot of what was getting talked about on the track line was kind of like the uncertainty, the future of this craft that you know I just broke into, and we're talking about, you know, what's it going to look like 10 like shit, I don't know, like I just got here, like why are you guys asking me?
Why are you moving the furniture around?
yeah, exactly. So so it was really hard to just kind of get into a really comfortable creative space when so much was in the air.
Well, it's kind of a reverse for you, Amadou, in the context that, like, you kind of got your break late in life, so to speak. You know what I mean? Like, in your 40s, if I recall. You know what I mean?
Right. So, I mean, it's different. I think it gives you some perspective. I mean, we've come from different careers, too, so you have that on it. But I do think some of it allows you to take, like, a bigger picture. Like, the uncertainty of the strike sucked, but, like, there's going to be film and television like that's going to be there. How, what it's going to look like and who's going to get shut out, all that stuff is another thing. Right. But at some point it's coming back. So I think, you know, it's definitely a perspective thing. I think for me during the strike, the first couple of weeks, you know, you're just sad and depressed. It's like, I'm not going to work on anything. But I think for me, writing something helped get me through it because I could just live in another world and focus on that. And then when I finished the script I was writing, you know, it's like you stick your head back above water and you're like, oh, shit, this really sucks. This is really, really bad. Like the last month of the strike or whatever, that was hard because I didn't have any distractions anymore. Yeah, and I was like, Jesus.
Yeah.
I was supposed to have this thing wrapped up by the time I finished this. So,
he's like, I was going to sell this one.
you know?
Wow. What about for you, Renee? What was it like for you as you were working as an executive? What was it like for you guys going to work every day and, you know, you couldn't really sell anything. You couldn't really develop too many things at the time.
Yeah, it was it was awkward, to say the least.
Right.
I think there was a lot of fear and anger with the whole AI element.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Especially with screenwriters. It's still here. Yeah, absolutely.
We're still worried.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so, like, it was a situation where, like, look, put your head down, do your work. But there's, like, a lot of noise externally and in the trades.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And people are fighting for their jobs at the end of the day. People just want to make good and honest work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no, you know, at a macro level, no matter what, there's going to be stories, film and TV, no matter what.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
How does that look like? Where is that going? I'm not sure.
Hmm.
One thing, as I'm breaking in, I worry about if I'm climbing a ladder that's leaned up against a wall that's on fire. Mm-hmm. We talked about that yesterday.
Yeah.
There was a screenwriter. I won't say his name.
Okay. What his name is.
He's a he. That cuts it in half.
We know it's going to be bad now.
He recently had a theatrically released film.
Okay.
Had a big movie star. Mm-hmm. And he told me no one cared. No one saw it. If it was 2005, different story.
Right. Mm-hmm. That movie star was really hot in 2005.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Understood. Mm-hmm. It's here's what I was telling him last night. Like, so I used to tell this story about how I sold my first movie that got produced.
Mm.
And I'll give you guys just a piece of it. So I had entered my first script into the Sundance feature, whatever. Forget what the hell they call it now.
Feature lab.
It was a long time
ago. It's a lab, yeah.
And I got into the top, I don't know, 10, 20 or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. So I made it to that final, like, whatever, the cutoff.
Mm-hmm.
So I made the list. So all of a sudden, my name was out, like, in the trades and, like, everywhere, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And what happened was everybody started hitting me going, hey, I want to read the script. And one of them was this producer who we used to be in the same management company as actors. Mm-hmm. He went off and started his little indie company and started making these horror and thriller films or whatever, and he would sell them to, like, you know, internationally, like, every year. He had, like, one or two every year. He was killing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was like, hey, I see your name and you're writing, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, you got any horror? And I was like, well, I'm toying with this idea. What if what if this? So he's like, come in and pitch. So I pitched it to him, the whole thing, and he was like, I love it. So he bought it.
Yeah.
So this was in February. I wrote it February, March. By September, they were shooting it, right? Mm-hmm. It was his biggest budget project at the time.
Yeah.
And so this is where I'm going. This is all going to tie in. So we go out, they shoot the movie. I was doing my last show on the stage. I was doing Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Oh, yeah.
And we were killing it. Selling out light after night. And I stopped doing the show because I wanted to go produce my first project. So one of the things I did, because I did this contract without my reps at the time, he bought the movie for a certain amount. Wasn't a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And then... he gave me a co-producer credit and half a point. Mm-hmm, I was right. like, mm-hmm, I'm going to mm-hmm. be rich.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
yeah. Right?
You now, and Alec Guinness.
Bro, yeah. This is 2004. So this is going to tie in. Fast forward, we make the movie. It takes them a while to get it all edited and all that shit. Mm-hmm. Finally, by 2005, we screen it. It does well. We take it to AFM. That year, 2006, and boom, it sells in like 3 hours to like seven or eight countries like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember being there going, wow, dude, they're just showing my trailer on the damn thing. And people walk in, you know, salesmen, whatever they call them, and they just check a box and shit, like if they want it or not.
Yeah.
And people were just buying it. So this is a long story, but I want you to hear the game. Fast forward a month or two later, I'm like, yo, bro, where my money at? Right?
Where's my 10%? You know, like, literally, this time.
And he's like, did you see your contract? And I was like,
oh, no.
Huh?
Yeah.
So me and my husband go back and look at the contract. He says, and he said this, you have a domestic contract.
Oh, man.
All the places we sold, and you know a lot about
international.
This. All the places we sold to were international. And I was like, oh. So for about 2 minutes, I was upset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
More with myself for not understanding that. But this is pre the internet mm-hmm. going crazy. Mm-hmm. So now I know to look up a company and to see what they do. And you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Back then, you just were on the trust of whatever. So I thought to myself, okay, this reminds me when I first started writing, another big writer friend of mine told me, your job is what I told you last night. Your job as a writer is to become a produce writer.
Mm-hmm.
You got that.
Yeah.
Now use it.
Mm-hmm.
And it took all the weight off of it. Mm-hmm. So I started letting people know what I'd done. And they were like, oh, why don't you be on this panel? And then it started turning around. Mm-hmm. So the positiveness came out of...
Right.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That is your job. You know, can you say that you have a new movie you just sold?
Can't give too many details, but recently a movie of mine, me and my writing partners made, got sold. It's getting made. Awesome.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
No matter what network it is, you got to get it done, bro.
Thank you.
Exactly.
But you're right. It has created momentum.
Right.
This creates momentum.
Right.
And that's your produced screenwriter now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now you get the IMDb credit. You need it. You know how we are.
Oh, yeah.
Every time you meet somebody, you probably looked me up last night. I mean, that's what we do. It's like, who is this motherfucker?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
You want to know that they're legit. Yeah. So that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Were you going to say something? Go ahead.
No. I wasn't gonna say nothing.
I thought you were gonna say something. You gonna say?
One thing that Renee said earlier about, you know, the uncertainty of the strike. The thing as writers that was a surprise for us mm-hmm. was that we figured, all right, we're on strike for 6 months. As soon as we come back, man, barn doors are open,
right.
And we realized that the pods weren't doing anything during that 5 months mm-hmm. because the studios weren't doing anything for that 5 months because. They had, you know, it was like the studios were on strike.
Right.
And there, you know, like you said, there was uncertainty, people trying to figure out if they're going to have a job on Wednesday, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of stuff happening. So I think that's one of those things that makes you look at big picture. Like, it's not just the struggle of the writers, it's the whole industry is in this big, tumultuous thing that everybody's got to try to fight out of. And mm-hmm. so then you realize it's bigger than you, which takes. It sucks because then, you know, it's just uncertainty on top of it. So you figure, well, the adults know what's happening.
Right, right.
And then you realize they don't. But then it's also, like, you get it. It's a big, gigantic, like, entity, and mm-hmm. it's going to sort itself out. And, you know, all you can do is just be ready when it's ready to sort out. Like, there's nothing you can do to push it further along to be like, okay, I'm going to be in this position when right. the... you know, when the stuff is ready.
And it didn't help that, you know, the actors went on strike too. I mean, it helped us in the context of, us all coming together.
Definitely helped
for but that. It didn't help those of us independent filmmakers who were like, okay, well, while we're waiting, I'm going to go shoot some shit. Because then they're like, oh, you can't use him either.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So I'm going to put you on this pause. And they were only giving out so many of those vouchers or whatever to so many people.
Yeah.
So you couldn't even get them, you know, at the time. So it was a difficult time.
It's funny that you mentioned that, kind of like thinking about the industry and the executives and what it was like for them in that time. Like, I just had a meeting yesterday with my managers, and we were talking about, because the room that I'm in, the show that we're on, we're coming up on completing finishing the first season, and then so we'll probably complete that either end of January, maybe end of February. And so we're like, me and my manager were talking about what's next, and I was talking a little bit about, you know, some of the meetings that I'd had before the strike, and I was like, oh, so-and-so was talking about this show, and that if the timing works out with the show that I'm on, maybe I could slide into that room. And I think I dropped like four or five names, and they were all like, oh yeah, that person actually moved on from that company. Like, there were so many executives that were either fired or, you know, moved or still kind of trying to find where they fit in the restructuring of their companies, because a lot of projects kind of disappeared that they were overseeing, and so now they're kind of filling on the outs on some things. And so there's so much like I said, this is just echoing the same point about uncertainty, but existing on both sides. I mean, I think we kind of painted with a broad brush with respect to executives over the strike, of kind of like them sitting pretty because they're all salaried employees while we're on the strike lines. But you know, coming back into it and kind of viewing the fallout of it, I mean, at least at the level that we're dealing with, probably the higher ups that are, you know, we're just fine. But I mean, there's a lot of a shift in the movement. So I had a point with this.
I think it's right over there.
Yeah. I passed it about 2 minutes ago, but you guys know what I mean.
But that's true, because I think, you know, looking like for what the positive in all this is, you know, a lot of pain, a lot of suffering, for sure. But I think for me, at least, it really hit home. Like, this is a fucking business, right? And nobody's looking out for you but you. You know what I mean? Like, nobody's going to... Yeah, that's not true. Nobody's as invested in making sure your success happens than you, right? And so, I think, you know, like Raw and I, we break in, it's like, oh my God, we're making film and television. It's a whole, you know, you get this fairy tale kind of feeling of like everybody just wants to tell amazing stories and stuff. And you realize, like, okay, that's true. But above those executives who want to do that is like, you know, the Igers and the Zaslavs and stuff, and you know, and it's a fucking business, and so you have to go into that, like, as a understand that you're, you know, the goal is to be a partner. It's not just like, oh man, they love writers so much and they're going to do all this amazing stuff. Like, it's like, no, you got to position yourself to where you, to the extent you can, be a partner in this thing, understanding that everybody's got to be bringing something to it. And the minute you're expendable, right? And so I think that was a good eye-opener to, you know, just a splash of cold water that I think helps look at, you know, when you think of how you want your career to go moving forward, it's like, oh, okay, so how do you position yourself? Like, you know, for me, it's about, like, accumulating. There's money, and then there's power and leverage, and I think we all get enticed by the money, but I feel like that's kind of a losing game, because a lot of money to me is always going to be a little bit of money to HBO, Disney, to Warner. Like, and there's nothing I can do about that, because I wasn't born a billionaire. Bigger bill.
How did you get on billions? I don't know.
Yeah, that Bugatti outside isn't mine. It's a rental. But it's about how do you develop a plan where you collect, like, the power and the leverage, so that as you enter these partnerships, it's not like way unbalanced, like top to bottom. Like, it's never going to be 50-50, but at least not let it be 98-2.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. Let me ask you guys a question. You just brought up something interesting. So when I'm like in the gym or doing my stair climber, I'm watching a lot of, like, I'm almost embarrassed to say I do it, but it inspires me. I don't know what the fuck it is. I watch, like, Dame Dash interviews and, like, Jeezy. Mm-hmm. Like, all the people who are like, I'm a boss. Rick Ross. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they all have this philosophy that they only, if it's not like, they don't go to work for somebody. They become somebody's partner.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I love mm-hmm. how they talk about it in that context, mm-hmm. right? So, but here's one other little interesting thing. All of them kind of have this, and I don't mean to put them all in the same umbrella. They have a version of this. Specifically Dame Dash. And mm-hmm. he knows it, so I'll tell him to his face. But love him. But he has this thing where it's like, you're not really like a man, like if you don't work, if you still work for somebody. Mm-hmm. You know, if you ever seen in his interviews, he talks like that a lot. Have you ever seen that, right?
Yes.
And he's like, you know, I made myself this and this. I'm like, wait a minute. Didn't you sell drugs to get
mm-hmm.
the hundreds of thousands of mm-hmm. dollars so that you can get the studio and the, you know, and the whatever you did? Like, it would be the equivalent of us doing that to go make our movie.
Mm-hmm.
You had a boost.
Yeah.
So you can't even compare the same thing to some average person who works hard to get whatever they are. Yeah. But yet he doesn't have respect for the fact that you work for somebody.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you cheated though.
Yeah.
Am I, is it me?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's how I see it. It's just funny.
No. I mean, I get that. Like, it's like they're, I mean, not to say that, you know, selling drugs to get your company in order.
Yeah. You still got to be talented. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I'm not taking away the
there
talent.
There are some that is kind of like, there, you know, it's like so much of, you know, coming up from the streets and building something is a by any means necessary mindset, right? 50 Cent, get rich or die trying, mm-hmm. right? Like, whatever you have to do in order to break out of it. And I think that, you know, coming from probably where Dame Dash comes from, he's rationalizing a lot in his mind, but it's the idea of looking upon other folks like, you know, you are where you are
mm-hmm.
because you've got like a, you know, a weak-minded mindset.
You know, that's exactly mm-hmm. how I feel like he looks.
But that's America, though. Yeah. That's the Sacklers literally sold drugs to make their thing. The Rockefellers, all that. And when you talk about, you know, billionaires, like their attitude towards people who don't have what they have is like, it's your fault.
Yeah.
Like, I'm special, but you should at least be at this level. Like a good friend of mine back in New York who used to work in like the investment banking world,
mm-hmm.
you know, black man. And he would tell me stories of like wealthy white people. You know who they hate more than black folks? It's poor white folks. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's just like the disdain they have for that.
Yeah.
I used to think it was an oxymoron, but I understand the reality of just, you know, some people just don't get opportunities. We think because they're white, they should get it. But there's way more levels and details to that.
Yeah.
What you got to say?
I mean, going back to the industry, it's like...
That's why we call the rant room, by the way.
Yeah. It's like this industry was designed for rich kids.
Yeah.
And...
Well, it starts with places like where you work, where you got to work in the mail room and you got to have a BA to be in there. It's like, why? I'm doing the mail.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, like, I come from an immigrant mom.
Right.
Went to UC Berkeley. And then after UC Berkeley, I was interning for free, trying to break into the industry. Yeah, she did not understand that. Absolutely not.
What the hell
are you doing? What are you doing?
Yeah.
But if I was a rich kid, mm-hmm. grew up in West Hollywood, that's easy. Yeah. I can walk to work. I can walk to Gersh and live off my parents' paycheck and just vibe out.
Stay in the pool house in the back.
Correct. Correct.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it the people who break in to have their big shot, they grew up that way.
Mm-hmm.
And the people on the outside, it's 200x harder for them to break in.
Yeah.
Totally. And folks on the inside don't realize that, you have to commute 2 hours to get here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They don't recognize that privilege.
I mean, in that same vein, I mean, it's like, I was just listening to an interview a casting director was doing an interview. I'm going cross that right now because I'm wondering if it was actually one of the old episodes of this Screenwriters Rat Room. But anyways, the casting director was talking about how the difference between people who come in and audition from a state of desperation and people who just come in and they're just there to, you know, to read some lines for you, right? And from
from an actor's perspective, a lot of times people will like they'll judge the people that come in and just it seems like they don't take it seriously.
Right.
Yeah.
Versus the people that are desperate, they took it seriously. They spent all night memorizing right. the word. Mm-hmm. They're word perfect. Right. You know what I mean? They come in there, but they're given a rigid performance, right? Mm-hmm. They're not.
They're in their head.
They're yeah. in their head. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And it's and. In an industry like Hollywood, where so much of it is relationship based, it's you know you meet somebody at a party,
right?
And
at
you know,
a party,
really? Yeah, at a party, at a studio lot party, right? And
stripper pole,
sound yeah, show, yeah, 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 yeah. And if you're coming into an environment like that, where you're meeting somebody and you're thinking to yourself, oh shit, this person could give me a job.
Right.
Like this person could change the trajectory of my career. Could be the person, you know, like now you're that desperate actor mm-hmm. who's, you know, like giving them a very stiff 5-minute elevator pitch on why you were going to write the next big, you know, fucking Sharknado. Mm-hmm. right. Versus if you come from a place where it's like, you know, I think a lot of times sort of this is again, getting back to the benefit mm-hmm. of coming from a wealthier background, you don't necessarily need every person, you know, every opportunity is not make or break, right? Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, if right. if you that pressure of surviving in this industry is alleviated, it allows you to be a little bit more loose, a little bit more mm-hmm. of yourself.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that people are so
more opportunities are life changing for other people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But here's the dig. This is the rub. I'm gonna turn around okay. into a positive. For those of us who came from like a background of not of means, mm-hmm. once you have enough of those conversations with people that could potentially change your life and you fuck those conversations up, after a while, you get to a place mm-hmm. where you are comfortable conversing with those folks because you realize there's always going to be another, you know, mm-hmm. Damon Dash you're going to meet. You're always going to, mm-hmm. I don't know about, you might not meet 3 or 4 Damon Dash, but right. you're always going to meet somebody who's going to mm-hmm. potentially be in a position to give you your first break. And once you kind of break over that, you know, getting past that place of desperation, being comfortable, our stories are so much richer than those kids who mm-hmm. have lived lifestyles 100%. That have been a little pampered maybe, and that shows through. And so when we get comfortable, you hit like a lightning rod.
Here's mm-hmm. here's the only caveat to that I would yes and mm-hmm. right is having been an actor myself since I was 12 to the time I was 34.
Yeah, yeah.
And now having sat behind probably a couple hundred casting sessions, I still see the same. Here's the thing that I see. The people who come in, what you're talking about, the guys and girls who get the roles and the things I've done, walk in the room and I can look at them and go, oh, Rob probably just finished doing an episode of Law & Order last night. Like he feels it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, yeah. Like you just got through doing a job a week ago or whatever. Like you come back with a spirit of, I can do.
I belong.
You know what I mean? It's a difference than I haven't worked in 6 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's the thirst you're talking about. The
hunger, yeah.
Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whereas the other dudes come in loose. They're like, I can get this thing. I can get another job tomorrow.
It's the confidence.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But also along that, I think, you know, one thing where we do have to be careful is because it is a relationship industry and you see a lot of people who base their interactions on people of what they think they can get from them. So if it's somebody at their level or below, they're like, nah, whatever. But if it's somebody that they think they can get some, you see how they treat them differently. And that shit really pisses me off because it's such an ingrained thing. Like, I get it. You want something from this person who's maybe in a position to help you. But if you're just nice to everybody, man, because you never know, the person who's at your level or below 2 years from now could be the head of a company,
mm-hmm. yeah.
you know? And I think when you see that, because I think for me, like, I always try to treat everybody the same. And, like, mm-hmm. if I'm genuinely excited about something or somebody's work, like, I don't care if they want an Oscar or they're just struggling. I'm like, man, that was great. That was amazing. Mm-hmm. But I am starting to see that sometimes that comes across as, like, they take it as, like, oh, this person wants something from me, which means they're below me. Right. And mm-hmm. I've seen it play out where, you know, I've gone up to somebody after they gave a great talk. It's like, man, that was really great the way you did that with so many, you know, because it was generally how mm-hmm. the way I felt about it. And you get the vibe is kind of like, nah, yeah, yeah. Right. But then, like, the next week when they find out you've got more credits than they do,
mm-hmm. yeah.
then they're like, oh, hey, it's great to see you, you know? And I'm like, oh, man, come on. Like, mm-hmm. so I do think, you know, there's the difference between
the desperate of, there's a difference between being thirsty and being like, this means more to me than the other person because I don't have anything to go back to. And that's all super valid. But I just think it's just a lot easier if you just nice to fucking everybody. Mm-hmm. Like, why is that so hard?
So let's get into this plans versus the goals. Part of it all. So, like you said, we went through a really interesting year where all of your goals and plans were effed up, right? Mm-hmm. What do you, let me go, I'm going to go down the line. I'll start with you, Renee. What do you see yourself doing differently next year that you, you can't even compare this year, it's been so bad. But like, what are some of the things you plan on doing next year? Thinking about it in the context, not saying you have to take my context, by the way, of this is a lifestyle change and this is your diet plan, but like, what do you see for yourself like next year, 2024? Like, what do you, where do you want to go?
That's a great question. I, as in a development exec, I've made peace with the fact that the David Zaslavs, the Bob Igers, they're going to use AI to potentially replace me. They're gonna fire 50 folks and hire 3 AI guys. I can already start smelling it. Deadline released an article that Paramount's gonna let go a lot of folks. I've made peace with the fact that that could easily be me. But thankfully I have a wonderful tribe of other screenwriters and they help with the lifestyle. I'll tell their names. Tyler Mowry, he's a YouTuber, teaches screenwriting, practical screenwriting. Ricky, Alberto Jag, I know they're listening to this, but all wonderful screenwriters. And so to answer your question, I plan to have my output really, really, really strong. And just to build up my own brand. Because it sounds like from, it's really hard to see where this industry is going. Especially with this technology that causes a lot of fear. But I know if, as long as you keep producing and you keep putting that output, hopefully, God willing, that that should help.
Now let me ask you this. When you describe yourself as a writer, how do you describe yourself?
In what way?
Like, so, for example, I'm going to put you on the spot, Raw. When you describe yourself as a writer, what do you describe yourself?
I'm a...
I've done this to you before.
I wasn't, but like I thought because I did it before, I was like, I'm going
right, to do, I'm going to do, I'm going to put you on the spot. I'm going to do, how do you describe yourself as a writer?
I'm a writer who writes about complex layered relationships, often like an intergenerational dynamics in which people are struggling with what they think they owe others versus what finding and reaching for what's true inside themselves, and that sort of inner conflict of like, what do I owe to my happiness versus what do I owe other people?
And I say, teasing you, Raw.
I'm ready. I'm ready.
Oh, now you're ready.
Send it back my way.
Go ahead.
Bat that shit out the air. No, I'm a I'm a writer. I got a background in medicine and a background in engineering. So a lot of my writing. Oh, and then also I was an actor for 5 years before transitioning into screenwriting. So a lot of my work centers on sort of the collision between technology and the advancement of technology and the drama of human stories. And so really kind of like how technology is evolving around us, but we're still humans at heart. And though, if you look at everything that I've written from the short stories to the show that I'm working on, it's all about, you know, the how do we as humans connect with one another when the world is changing around us so much? So,
like it,
but that's
I like it.
In brief,
And I write underdog stories in the murder, death, kill world. And when I pitch, I'm usually talking about, and I was telling you about how I grew up in the EPA and you know, this little punk rock kid and blah blah blah. And so I tell that story so you see, oh, he was an underdog. Matter of fact, motherfucker still is an underdog. You know what I mean? I'm still an outsider trying to survive in Hollywood, black and gay. You know, I got the 2-for-1. You know
what I mean? Yes.
And so I'm trying to help you understand that. So when I tell you that I write underdog stories, I'm like, and it could be in the past, it could be today, whatever, but I'm an old soul. So I always go to the past. And number one, it's because I think it's harder to put your characters up against the wall when they can't pick up the cell phone and call.
Mm-hmm. Of course. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I love to do that. So he didn't get the memo. It's black folk.
No.
Well, he was just emphasizing here.
No. Yeah, yeah. He was giving you an example.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So over the 40-something scripts I've written, I'm constantly, if you read any of them, same thing. It could be a zombie script, still the underdog story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could be something in the 1800s, still the underdog story. Yes. You know what I mean? I always figure out exactly the through line for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make more sense?
That makes sense.
Now, who are you?
I write stories, hero's journey stories, of people walking towards their truth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
What I struggle with is like the voices in my head, my brain. Oh, the imposter syndrome. Oh, you're not good enough.
Right.
Trying to exclude that out and listen to my intuition, listen to my heart. Okay. I believe I do that a lot with the characters, a lot with my characters.
Okay. That helps.
So like right here is like the ego, and right here is like the higher realm.
Right.
I believe that's a theme, a thread line I put through all my characters.
Okay.
I mean, like, for example, like Luke Skywalker,
mm-hmm.
classic hero's journey.
Mm-hmm.
In here, in his head, oh, farmer boy, I'm not going to fight the rebels.
Right.
But it's a journey that in his heart, in his intuition, it was meant for bigger and greater things.
Right, for sure.
I would say that's the type of writer. Those are the stories that I really love.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense. And my brain's going over mm-hmm. there. Stay on track. I always want to go off on another rant.
Goals.
Plans versus goals.
That's why I was going to rant. Okay. That's good.
I can go deeper, but I don't want to steer off.
No, but no, that was good. No. You tied your personal connection to it, why you can write those stories as different than if I wrote it or Ra wrote it or Hilly wrote it, and then you say like what your character's going through. Like that's
always lead with this is where I'm going.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is your lead, whether you get a general meeting, whether you get a meeting with a showrunner, whatever. You know, you tell them the type of writer you are, so that, and it's not about, a lot of people think you're pinning yourself against the wall into some lane. You're actually showing me that you could do a lot more than you told me. If that makes sense.
Yes. Mm.
That's really the key.
Yeah, because the thing you got to keep in mind is as soon as they see your face in that room, they've created a narrative of what kind of stories you're about to tell. So anytime you give them something in your personal life, it's like, oh, wow, that's kind of relatable to what I go through. And then you give them, this is how it plays into their thing. I feel like that's half of the job.
Right.
Yeah.
Done. Because then you're like, okay, so tell me the story about when you guys were migrant, you know, apple pickers and trying to get over the Rio Grande and do it. You know what I mean? Like that's the reality of like what we all have to fight against is like what they see when you walk in the door.
Yeah.
100%.
So now, what do you see goals and plans for yourself next year?
Specifically.
Yeah.
I'm
do you want to eventually move away from being an executive and really focus on writing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. No, I would love to have my own production company.
Mm-hmm.
Something I'm really thinking about.
You could just start.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm really confident in my tribe, in my team. We all love writing.
Okay.
We're all super disciplined. We meet weekly, 4-hour Zoom sessions, talking about each of our stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I know in the future, the most important thing is going to be ownership.
Mm-hmm.
Ownership of your IP.
Mm-hmm.
You can license it out.
Right.
All different types of territories. And when you build your brand, you could build your audience. Mm-hmm. I think that's where things are going.
Right.
With this technology, like, filmmaking is becoming deflationary, which is...
That's a big word. We don't have a word in the project. What's happening?
It's on its way down. Right?
It's getting cheaper,
okay.
Which is a beautiful thing and a very scary thing, too. I think with David Zaslav and how he came into Warner Brothers, slicing and chopping things off, it really put into perspective, like, you can't make $50 million shows and just keep subscribers.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So knowing him, he's going to use his technology to find a way to make movies cheaper.
Yeah.
It's getting it's already hard enough. You don't see the mid-budget movies.
Won't go down, will it?
No, not his.
It's gonna go up. Yeah. I saved you $700 million last year. Shouldn't I get six?
Yeah. But it's really put big perspective, like building an enterprise where I can maintain ownership. Mm-hmm. That's where I see myself going in 2024.
Okay.
Yeah.
Amadou, what about you?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think the way I like to think about it is sort of objective versus goals, or like your why versus your goals. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's like the objective or the why has has stayed the same since I decided I want to be a screenwriter. It's like, why am I trying to do this? Because I've seen the power that television and film can have on somebody. Like Norman Lear, right? The amount of impact this man has had on people's lives. For me, that was half the TV I was watching as I was a kid. Yep. And I wanted to be able to do that, put through stories. Like, I've seen the power of stories to shape narratives in the country and individually, and that's what I want to do. Now, the goals thing is what changes all the time. Like, when I was trying to break in, my goal was like, okay, my five-year plan, I want to show run my own show. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. Then after I break in and get a gig and you start to see kind of how the sausage is made a little bit, it's okay. Well, my goal now, I think, because then you really see how rigid the industry is in terms of who they allow access to and they don't. And so for me, if
so
I can
have to pivot your idea, maybe.
Well, but it's a different goal. Like, the objective is still the same.
Okay.
But the goal then,
like a realistic goal and a goal in some ways.
I don't know. I think you realize once you get in the industry, like all the stuff that people were telling you when you're trying to break in, you find out how much of that is irrelevant or right. isn't true. And then you're like, okay, so that's the game now. So then how are you going to play that game? So I think for me, it became, if I died and I had successful shows and stuff, whatever, like that's cool, but that's not enough for me. I want to be able to make an impact on how the industry looks and who gets to tell what stories. So that's like, oh, I want to have a production company so that then I can bring writers along, because I know from my career in journalism and everything, when the company's like, oh, we want diversity, like the only way they'll make a move, you have to hand that shit to them on a silver platter. Mm-hmm. It's not like just hire more people of color. It's like, here's the talented people of color and here's the product that they do and just sign on that. Like, it has to be that easy or else because they don't really want to do it.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you make it easy enough for them, well, it's like, all right, well, the PR I'll get from this is worth it. And then, you know, hopefully you make some money. So then it switched to like run my own show, which is still a goal. But OK, but really a production company. And the reason that's different is because I think when you start to think about your career, those are two different paths. Like, there's choices that you might have to make that could get you to the show running thing faster versus choices you can make to get you to the production thing faster. Right. So then, with that goal, you're like, well, how do I do that? And you talk to people who are doing it. And you see the pitfalls. Well, I don't want to do it that way. I want to do it this way. And then I think this year, getting back to the original question, is, you know, 2024 is going to be a lot about on the feature side for me as opposed to the TV. Yeah, yeah. And I've known that I wanted to do both, but I devoted a lot of energy to the TV side because I think, like, staffing is – it's harder to break into. It's more lucrative, but it's harder to break into because there's just fewer opportunities. And I feel like now, like, knock on wood, that part of it is at a thing where we just need to keep the momentum going. And now, like, my reps can do some of the heavy lifting on that versus the film side, because of all the things that Renee was talking about, like TV, we don't know where it's going to be. But if you want to be in film, the writer is king in TV and the writer is the hired gun on the film side. Yep. So then it's like... That makes me think about the writer-director thing. So this year coming up, I'm going to write and direct a short because to do what I want to do on the film side, I'm going to have some of that power.
Yeah.
Because I'm not looking to just do, oh, I'll write a murder mystery. I want to write personal stories that mean something to me. And yeah, so it won't be a $50 million budget, but it'll be a story that I have, like, I can understand what the heart of the story is. And that'll be the skill I bring to it. Mm-hmm. As a director, and communicate that to actors, and do all this stuff. So again, I think the whole point is, like, the goals have changed for me from show run, production company, write, direct, now on the film side, but that's all still within the service of that same objective. So I feel like
it'll still lead you to show running, just a different way to get there.
Yeah, and I think the way, the path you choose to get there can be different, because I think, again, when I was breaking in, like, the holy grail was, oh, get an overall deal.
Yeah.
Bro, in the last 2 years, I have taught, I know one upper level with an overall deal.
You know, that is, you know, Saeed too.
No, but that is not utterly disgusted and disappointed.
Yeah.
I know. Mm-hmm. Ben. Yeah. Ben, I think, and you know, and Ben is a real strategic guy, so he's figured out his thing. But every, I just had dinner with an upper level last night who show run tons of stuff, and it's just like, this fucking overall kill. Like, why are you still keeping me on here? You're not making anything that I'm doing. Mm-hmm. You're keeping me from doing the stuff I want to do. Mm-hmm. But I can remodel my house. You know what I mean? So it's that. So I think, like, but that's the thing of, like, it's just the more you peel back the layers in this industry and find out how stuff actually works, you, and I feel like you have to constantly readjust those steps, keeping in mind, like, what your goal is. Because if the goal is just to make money, fuck it. Do the overall, buy a house in Malibu, and then you would never get anything on TV, but you got the house.
No, I mean, and what you talk about is real. I mean, it's hitting home. It's actually reminding me of, like, because Amadou was on the scene when I first got staffed on the show that I'm on now, which was almost 2.5 years ago. And I remember we were talking about my contract, and they were like, oh, it's written in the contract. You know, season one, staff writer, season two, story editor, season three, executive story. Like, you'll just march up those levels, and it's all written in the contract. As long as the show keeps going.
Here's the deal. Everybody gets that deal.
Yeah. But I mean, like, it's fucking new to me, right, man. I don't know shit. And it felt very real. But basically what I'm getting at is that it felt very real.
Right.
The traditional mechanism from going from a new staff writer to showrunner. I saw the path. You know, I started, you know, each year I'm progressing. Fast forward 2.5 years, you realize you're in a development room and you're still a staff writer. I mean, because season one hasn't even gone into production.
Yep.
Season one won't go into production, you know, until this summer. Then it's a year. Then the show releases. Like, now we're talking late 2025 before anybody even sees an episode of TV that you've written. And it's like, and then, all right, well, we'll start writing season two, and you'll be a story editor. Like, you realize that
on the show nobody's even seen yet.
Yeah.
Exactly.
The mechanism from getting, you know, through the traditional mechanism of just rising through the ranks to become a showrunner,
it's done.
Unless you're on
NCIS type of thing, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. And those rooms are now shrinking. Exactly. You know, so the opportunities to the reality is that you kind of have to get a little creative with how you make your way forward in this industry, how you continue to progress if you want to develop. Some people just want to, you know, they're cool with it. You know, it's like, I mean, because on a certain point, it's like, well, I still was getting paid as a staff writer. I was still, you know, working as a writer, even though I was, you know, staying at one level for a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine if you don't have any ambitions to ultimately develop. But if you want to run your show, you gotta move up. And that's just taking a while. So, but yeah, that was just kind of expanding on that thought, at least how it related to me. As far as my plans and goals for this, I guess this is probably a continuation of that same idea.
Okay.
It shouldn't be no surprise that, I mean, me and Amadou talk a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So we have sort of cousins. Yeah. So we have similar sort of plans and goals. I had the opportunity almost a year ago to the day to direct a short, and, you know, went through all the process, you know.
You guys still in post, or what are you?
Yeah, we'll wrap it up. We'll talk about it later. We'll save that for off the airway. But yeah, for the most part, it's done. It was a great process. I mean, worked with a lot of great people, both cast, crew, post-production team. Everybody's great. But the thing that I walked away from it personally when I looked at it was, I go back and I watch it, and I'm like, I have so much to learn as a director.
Right.
I mean, even as a writer, to be perfectly honest, there's a lot of, I mean, I didn't write it with the extent of this is going to be an example of the peak of my writing capability. It was I just need a script so that I can start shooting something. I don't want to wait anymore. And I gotta get shooting. But now that I've kind of had that, and I go back and I look at my work, and I'm like, you know, I'm like teasing at the ideas of framing. I'm teasing at the ideas of composition. I'm teasing with the ideas of exploring the way light is mm-hmm. accentuating the stories. But it I can just, you know, I go back and I look at it and I'm like, I wasn't actually thinking about that at the moment, right? I didn't put in the forethought of it. The type of things that when you look at a great director, whether it's, you know, fucking Spike Lee or mm-hmm. Quentin Tarantino mm-hmm. or Martin Scorsese or whoever, there's so much thought that goes into every frame, the common adage of every frame of picture, right? There's so much thought that goes into all of these shots that we take for granted, where the director is telling the story alongside the script, alongside the performances mm-hmm. of the actors. It's mm-hmm. almost as if you took the words out of the if you couldn't hear, if you watched it on mute, you still understand what the story is about because the director is using all of these other tools to tell the story. And I realized I was lacking in that tool bag. I wasn't.
Can I just interject something though?
Yeah, go ahead.
I hear you.
Yeah.
But you got to remember that, and this is all praise to all those names you named. When you have 3 months to shoot something, as an example, as opposed to a day for your 7-minute piece or whatever the hell you're doing, it's going to be hard to get all the coverage. It just is what it is. Imagine if you had 4 days to shoot your 8-minute piece.
But that's what I'm saying is that I wasn't even putting, even if you had given me 2 more days, I don't know that I would have had the tools in the toolbox to really take advantage of that. And I mean, like, I would have definitely.
But your DP may have.
Yeah. You know? I would have. This is what would have happened if you would have given me 1 more day, because we actually had to cut back from 3 days to 2 days because we had a budget mm-hmm. issue. Mm-hmm. That means we ran out of money. Probably listening. The coded language budget. Exactly. So yes, we cut back from 3 days to 2 days. And if you had given me a third date, all I would have done was gotten more takes of the same shots. I mean, which actually would have been very helpful.
It would have made a difference
for the editing of the film. That would have helped a lot because we were kind of confined to only the takes that we got, and we didn't get a lot of them because of the time issue. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't even thinking on that. Like I said, I wasn't even thinking on that level of, I mean, I was to an extent, because this is background y'all don't really need to hear, but I'm going to give it to your listeners anyways. I built the set. We had a bunch of meetings with
production. I saw production. Those shots. Yeah, they looked dope though.
Yeah, I built the set because we had a bunch of meetings with production designers. They were like, you can't do this. You know, mm-hmm. they give you all the reasons in the world to do it. And it largely because these were professional production designers. Who were used to working with Netflix and other mm-hmm. companies. They had forgotten that there was a time when they were just a young, burgeoning, independent mm-hmm. filmmaker. And so they're like, oh, this would take $50,000, $60,000 to build. And I'm like, mother brother, man, it ain't.
Give me a hammer, some nails.
Yeah, exactly. And so I built the set, which is, again, we're getting too deep on this short, which was ended up being a spaceship. I built it myself in like a community workshop where I had all access to all the tools. I built mm-hmm. it out of wood. Doesn't necessarily look like it's made out of wood. Looks good.
It looked amazing.
It looked good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the I lost my where I was going with this.
We were talking about. Would have done more takes.
As a result of building the set myself, mm-hmm. I spent so much time in the space that we would be shooting in. That I was doing all of the framing. I was thinking about where the lights were going to go mm-hmm. and how they were going to impact mm-hmm. the shots and all those things. And so it wasn't like I was completely neglecting those elements of the film, but I was just kind of, I wasn't even thinking in terms of other options. Like I walked in on the day and I was like, well, I got this figured out. But I hadn't really, I figured it out a little bit from spending time in the space, but I wasn't actually dedicated to the process of being like, what is the best choice, not just what is the first idea that occurs to me, mm-hmm. but what is the best way in which I can use these elements to better accentuate the story, to be a better filmmaker. And so mm-hmm. my plans, as far as plans and goals, my plans of this year are to keep shooting. I not necessarily with the intent of making another short film, although that may be the outcome at the end of the year, but more so an exploration of how can I use the camera to craft a shot that is going to just make the job easier for the actors.
Yeah.
So that's really going to be the focus as far as my plans. I have a certain ideas about how I'm going to go about doing it. Basically, I'm just going to be shooting every week, you know, recruiting actors, you know, having other people write for
Smart.
It. Mm-hmm. And just kind of keep laying things down. Got a nice little camera rig. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be playing on the weekends, right? Writing for the man during the week.
Yeah. No, that's how you do it, man. Because I think, too, like something earlier you said made me think of this, of like, when you think, for us as writers, when you think about the writer-director, it's funny because you can watch some films and you can definitely tell there's a difference between directors who write versus writers who direct. Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? And then they both have their challenges and pluses. But I know, you know, I've been doing these director deep dives of just picking one director and watching a bunch of their stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, the idea of, as a writer, what you can learn as a director to get across things that you would have had to write before or that accentuate what you're writing. Oh, yeah. Like Sofia Coppola, right? Like, I mean, you know, the thing I really respect about her work is that her use of the camera and framing is really done in a storytelling to accentuate the story. And she has this film, like, to be fair, not my favorite film, whatever, but it's this movie somewhere about the you know, the sort of disaffected actor who's holed up in the shadow of Marmont for like 3 months. Mm. The film opens with just a stationary camera on a tripod, and it's just this race car driving around a track, and it's making an oval, and the camera's there, so you just hear, and then you hear the car coming faint, and you see the car every time it comes around. It's like easily a 2 minute shot of just, you know, the dude is in this car, you don't know who's driving the car, but the car's going nowhere.
Yeah.
And that's the metaphor for this whole man's life that she does in the film. Mm-hmm. And just to open the film like that, of like, that's like the best. And here is what I'm about to show you for 90 minutes. This is it. If you like it or not, you can't say I sold you a bill of goods, because here's what the film is.
Yeah.
And I think when we aspire to get to that level of being able to do that, because that, it accentuates the writing, it lifts some of the load off, and it shows just an intent and a purpose that I think sometimes as writers we're just like, ah, the directing thing is just, it's either playing with the actors or it's just lining up the shot or whatever, or just telling people what to do. But
you're,
it's
just
like
matching what's in the script, but it's a lot more than that.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
It sounds like she was setting the tone and giving you a metaphor for what's to come.
Everything. You know, and I mean? And that's the film she delivered. Right. That is exactly the film.
Yeah.
That opening sequence is the entire thesis of the movie.
Yeah.
That's the entire theme of the movie summed up in a 2 minute sequence.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. It actually kind of reminds me of because I used to work in medical sales a lifetime ago. But in it, they were always talking about whenever you're giving like a speech to a group of people, you want to have that, you want to have an idea impact. Then you start it. It's a 3-step sequence. You tell them what you're going to tell them. You tell them. Then you tell them what you told them.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And it's like that's like the setup. There's like this is the thesis. Watch the story, and then I don't know what the end of that movie is, but I'm willing to bet it's probably going to be her, you know, summarizing, right. You know, in some way, shape, or form, visually summarizing that story. That's not beating him over the head.
Hashtag recap.
Right, because that's the success, right? You make a film, and somebody comes out. You can't control whether people like it or not, but if people come out understanding what it was, like I'm like, fair. That's all you can ask for.
Right.
This is a movie about, you know, blah blah blah, and it's, and when you see that done well, man, it's really, really striking.
Yeah.
Roadmap Writers is best known for connecting emerging writers with literary representation through personal and strategic marketing plans developed with the writer. Check them out, y'all, at roadmapwriters.com and see all the cool stuff they have going on there. Be sure to follow them on the socials and make sure you use the code RANTROOM23. All caps, y'all. For 10% off on everything. Linked in the show notes. Ever wonder how to bottle up pure excitement, unbridled joy, and limitless potential in a single word? Woohoo! Woohoo Apparel is on a mission to unleash the infectious energy of woohoo onto the world. And they're doing it with undeniable style. I'm talking cool, fun designs made of soft-combed, ring-spun USA premium cotton and 50% polyester, and in sizes from small to extra-large to fit all Woohoo enthusiasts across the globe. Get your t-shirts and apparel at WoohooApparel.com and use the promo code WoohooSRR. That's capital WOOHOO, lowercase SRR. Links in the show notes. So, I had predicted, myself and Chris, we had predicted, Chris is my other co-host, I had predicted that the strike was going to last a long time, and it did. So it told me that whatever's going to happen next year is going to be a shift, right? Piggybacking off what you're talking about with what's happening in your world, it's actually interesting to hear the executives are worried about the AI too, because we're all thinking it.
Yeah.
We didn't know you motherfuckers were thinking about it, so it's good to hear that y'all motherfuckers, y'all got problems too.
Come on, notes calls. Like, that's right. Easy, yeah. AI. You could do that
easy.
Now.
Easy,
yeah.
Easy.
Yeah.
And I just, my manager sent me something like a month ago. There's some AI that you put the script in and it gives you the notes. I was like, what? I was like, no, I need to hear it from you, because you may not like a horror movie, but I might love it and be like, this is dope.
Yeah.
Where the machine is just going, it didn't do this. The hero's journey is whatever the fuck. And I'm like, no, I'm not listening to that. Now, back to what I was talking about. So when I knew it was going to be a long haul in the strike, I've been saying since probably February, we need to be thinking about what we're going to do to be our own bosses again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I spent many years in the indie world, which is how I've produced over 30-something projects. Now, I've done network and indie, mainly indie. And I'm like, okay, in 2024, I'm thinking I'm going to go back to doing more indie. Like, I have this $1 million movie that I want to do next year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I have a $15 million movie I want to do next year. But I want to keep them in the indie world, possibly, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason is I'm a control freak. Now, I'm joking. Kind of. But what I'm going to do differently than what I was doing before 2018 when I was really hitting it is I'm going to turn it up a notch. So now I know what I know. Now I've been an executive. Now I've produced a lot of shit.
Yeah.
Now I'm like, oh, now that I know my, just as an example, my producing partner is a big casting director, we can attach motherfuckers to their thing. Mm-hmm. So I think differently.
Yeah.
Right? So my head is like, dude, we could do this $1 million movie and make it look like 12.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
With the resources that I know how to get. So that's the difference in where I'm going now, is thinking about going back to my indie stuff a little bit more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Still doing my network shit, of course. But that way I stay more in control. So when I do go back to TV, I go back to TV the way I want to go back to TV.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But now they're like, yo, you did that last movie or that whatever it was, come work with us.
Yeah.
That's where I'm doing it, if that makes sense.
See, I think that control part is key, because I think that goes to what...
I want to be a partner.
What Dame... I was just going to say that. That's the partner thing, because I think... What led me to
Shout out to Dame.
We love you, brother. Yeah. You know, the thing that pushed me to, like, I got to write and direct a short is that I realized that, you know, knock on wood, if my career goes the way, you know, I hope it does, like, I'm never going to be getting fewer notes than I'm getting now. You know, being in rooms and stuff, and you get notes, studio notes, network notes, you write your stuff, you know, I had a traumatic experience with getting notes from my agents. Mm-hmm. It was my fault because I showed them a first draft, and I'll never do that again. But lesson learned. But, you know, it's like I need to do something where an idea comes out of my brain, a vision, get a small group of people committed to making that vision happen, and then make the thing and see what it looks like. And this is just for myself. If it stays in the drawer, if it never hits the festival, whatever, I will have gotten something out of that. Now, the funny thing is that, so, you know, I decided I'm going to do this thing. And then I talked to my film agent. So I was like, hey, man, you know, I'm going to make this short. And look, this is just for me, blah, 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 whatever. But I just want to know if that's something that could be helpful for you. And they were just like, dude, like, with a short, you give us like a 10, 11 minute short, like, we could send it around. Execs are going to read it before they step up from their computer. If they like it, they'll share it. It could go viral. The whole thing, that's so much easier than sending them a script. Like, you will,
just about saying,
it's going to, that script is going to be on a pile for some weekend when it's rainy and they can't go out of their beach house, whatever. But, you know, so it was
I have a lot more 10 minutes than I do 2 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
would you agree, Renee?
Yes.
You know what I mean?
That's the thing, is like, it makes you realize, but it comes from like you giving yourself permission. Like, here's this creative thing that I need to do, and I'm going to do it regardless. So my win is me doing it. Now, let's see if this can actually help on the strategy, career side, whatever. Right. And then they're like, dude, this would so help. And then it's like, okay, now it's like a double win.
Mm.
But it's about, you know, it stems from that need to have control, because we see now how this industry is of like, you're like, I made it. I'm a writer. I'm in a writer's room. And then you're like, here's this great idea. And okay, it not only has to go past the showrunner or the number two, then it has to go past the studio. Then it has to go past the network. And God forbid if the creator of the show isn't the showrunner, and then it has to go through that person. Mm-hmm. And you realize your job is just to make people happy.
So
how do you get to that space where, you know, you're the asshole in the room that's like, oh, Amadou comes in and give these notes and he blew up the whole episode or blah, blah, whatever. You know, it's like, how do you put yourself in positions where you can have your vision, right or wrong, and then, you know, you learn. Like, look, if you do it all by yourself and it's shit, then you're really happy about the collaboration part. Okay, I need people around me
for
this. You know, but the default of the system is the collaboration turns into, like, people having to justify their positions by giving you notes, because it's never going to be like, this is amazing, I don't have anything to say, because then what's my job? Why am I getting a check every week?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
correct.
So I was absolutely talking, I was talking earlier about there is a difference for me between the plans and the goals. So it was so important for me to have this 4 months when I went through not writing, because I was probably taking for granted the fact that I didn't even believe that there was such a thing as writer's block. I was so busy.
Yeah.
And I'm so trained to write with no problems. Mm. I just am focused. Mm. And so I was telling you, I come here every day from about 12 to about 5 or 6. That's it. If I'm on a project that I have to turn in, I might be here for 8 hours. But what I usually do is spend that time writing the outline. Mm. When I write the script, I go off in the find myself a cool hotel room somewhere with a beautiful view of the ocean, and I chill and I write it in a week.
Yeah.
And then I come back here and I spend the next month just cleaning it. you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, what I'm going with that is, I try to make sure that my process stays the same. That is why I call it my plan. My plan is to stay consistent. For me, if I would have made it just a goal to finish this project, for example, you're going to give yourself, this is why I asked you that question earlier about sometimes you have a goal, but then you have like a realistic goal and like a goal. Realistically, you know it's going to take you 3 months to do this, but you try to do it in a month. So you keep giving yourself wiggle room, you know what I mean, or whatever. And I'm like, but the plan would have made you finish it faster for me, because I'm like a tester. So I'm like, say I come up with an idea, I'm like, I'm gonna pretend like I gotta turn this thing into J.J. Abrams, and he asked for it in 2 weeks, and you gotta go. There's no, well, I know I made it up. You can't, you gotta believe it. You see what I mean? To me, I make that type of a plan where I just stay on the path and I don't come off of it. Now I'm just that focused. But everybody isn't, and I understand it.
Well, yeah, everybody has their way, but I do that too. Like, imaginary deadlines, I treat those serious. But I need that because, again, it gives me that day-to-day of like, okay, well, then if I could, you know, like, I'm not the kind of, for me, it's hard to say, I can't say I'm going to spend 4 hours on this every day. I can't set it by the clock. I could give myself a page count because then I know when it's flowing, I'm out in an hour and a half or maybe longer than that. But
I'm
that
imaginary deadline. So,
okay, true.
Yeah,
that's why.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair.
So you probably don't know this, Renee. So I sit down, I hit my alarm, it goes off for 45 minutes. I work out, and I just came from the gym. Me and Renee. I just came from the gym, but it's my way of changing the what I always call it, the atmosphere, the environment. So I don't never go outside and walk around. Like I told you, I never even walk around the other side over there. I never go on that side. And so I stay in here, but I work out for 10 minutes. I just do supersets, change my brain. Now I'm doing something in the 60s, so I'm just playing Motown or whatever the fuck. You know what I mean? So I constantly am keeping myself on that group. The alarm goes off, I switch, I work out, and I move on to the next project I'm doing. It might be something today. You know what I mean? Now I'm playing TI or whatever the fuck. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm constantly pushing, but as soon as it's 5 or 6 o'clock, I'm like, this was a cute scene, but I'll finish it tomorrow. Like, I can stop.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's just...
Well, that's true. I mean, you got to own your process, right? Like, of what works for you. Like, for me, I'm all about the walks. Even if it's just walking around my house. Like, I need to, you know... But I think one thing, though, that I've had to learn is to give yourself the permission to believe that you're actually going to do it, because there's going to be days when it's just not happening.
Sure.
And instead of but stressing that's when I'm about on the it. Other mm-hmm. thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's also like you got to say, all right, look, even though I wanted to work on this Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, mm-hmm. Friday, if Thursday the shit is just not flowing, like, just let it go and take right. a walk or do something. But it takes the belief that the whole idea just isn't then gone then and you'll never get it back. I think that's the challenge. Well, at least for me. But if you say, okay, all right, so Thursday was shit, I'll make it back up on Friday. You know, and it's like every time you do it, the more times you do it, the easier I feel like it gets to know I will finish this thing. So for me, the important thing is finishing it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Whether you say it's a month and it takes 3 months, because if you can say, look, these four things I have started and finished, that takes some of the weight off of, you know, it's going to get done.
Right. Yeah,
you
yeah.
might not know that it's going to get done on this particular day, but you have zero doubt. And I know a lot of writers struggle with that because, oh, I started this thing and then didn't finish it or didn't right. like that.
Yeah. I mean, I mm-hmm. think I always wonder, does that come from school? So many people have that thing where they wait until the night before they have to turn something in. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like that old, I don't know, because I didn't go to college.
Procrastinators.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, kind of like I was somebody who was a serial procrastinator all through my really? Academic life. Oh, you know, for at every stage, and as a result, I kind of got good at it, mm-hmm. and it became a benefit when I moved into the working world because I could do things in 2 days that, let's say, other people might I'll call it smarter motherfuckers would be fucking spend a week on that shit, but I could do it in 2 days if I needed to, and so it benefited me in a way. And then when I moved into writing, the procrastination kind of fell away a touch because I actually fucking love writing, right? Like I enjoy mm-hmm. it, and so it's like it wasn't something to be dreaded that you put off until you know it's kind of like, oh no, I can sit down and write for even if it's just an hour a day.
Mm-hmm. That's all you really need. A lot of people think they have to do the 5 to 8 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
And you get a lot done.
And getting back to the point that we talked about earlier about kind of like the struggles that I was having over the strike mm-hmm. to sit down and actually write. One of the things, and this kind of ties into what you were talking about process, is that I have over the last, you know, 5-6 years developed a process for writing TV pilots, episodic TV. Mm-hmm. What I was trying to do over the strike was different. I was trying to write a feature, and I had no process for that. Mm-hmm. Like okay. I did not. Yeah. I was trying to approach a feature
willy nilly out there.
Yeah, I was trying to approach it like the way that I approach a pilot, and the way that I approach a pilot is like I know the first thing I usually figure out with any pilot that I write is the ending. I know how it ends, right? Mm-hmm. And then it's like you work backward, like how do I get my character, you know, because you don't really, it's not a true ending, it's just kind of like a
destination point.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, yeah. And it's going to be something fun, something interesting, mm-hmm. something we're working towards. We're all building towards this really powerful climax, but I don't need to know all the small ins and outs of you know, like we'll answer all those questions episode 2, 3, 4, 5, like right. that's the beauty of it, right? You don't need
the front loader. Mm-hmm.
You want a series format, fuck right. you, pay me, right? Like, but I can write you a pilot. I can write you a pilot. But in a feature it's different. Completely. Right, you've mm-hmm. got to have, like, you can't just have a really cool ending, you know, like there's got to be, you know, all the you got to figure out. It's got to be a complete story, right? Because mm-hmm. there is no season two, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. You can't depend upon. You can't be like, well, in the sequel to this movie, yes. you know, nobody wants to read that script, yeah. right? If you're gonna, I gotta watch.
I've seen them.
Yeah, you've probably yeah.
seen them. Hey. Oh yes.
Hey. He didn't say people don't do them.
Yeah. yeah. Exactly. And I didn't have a process for figuring everything out from the basically the act one, act two, act three of a feature. It was just a whole different animal for me, and so sitting down I just had it was just another challenge in addition to some of the things that I was feeling with respect to anxiety about what's this industry going to look like going forward. It was just a million one things were preventing me from putting my fingers on the keyboard. Okay. I did write one thing, like a little rough outline. And I got like about halfway through for a feature, and I was like about halfway through, and I'm like, this is a fucking episode of TV, motherfucker. Like, I'm like, this is, I'm like, why is this shit looking like 50 pages long?
Right. Mm-hmm. So, all right, I got a question for you then.
Yeah.
You're talking about for you the process for TV features. Where in that did the writing the short fall? Because you did the short before.
Yeah, you did that before
the strike. So yeah, what did that feel more like TV?
Yeah. I mean, because because the...
Did you still give yourself like a teaser at Act 1, Act 2, Act 3?
No.
See, I still do when I do a short.
Yeah, the short that I did, like the way that I approach writing shorts is just kind of like, it's an exploration of an idea, a single idea, something that can't be, you know, an idea that's not so intricate or complex that it can necessarily support a series for sure, but not even a full feature movie. It can live inside of a movie, but the idea itself cannot
be. It could be a sequence.
It's like you're writing an act.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. Okay. And so, in the same way that you want your acts to start somewhere, you want to get your audience off, basically on the back foot, not really understanding what's going on, seeking for, you know, some understanding. And then you slowly give out information, and then at the end you deliver this thing, like everything that they thought they knew about this is actually wrong, right? Like those are like simple act things that I think are uniform, whether you're writing TV or you're writing feature films. It's those at the base level are the things that the media shares in common. And so what I wrote with respect to the short film was very much that, right? I mean, technically you could say it's three scenes, but really it's one scene, one long scene that cuts away to a flashback and then comes back to the scene, giving the audience the new information that they received in the flashback, and so that changes the scene in general. So yeah, if you broke it down, maybe you call it three scenes, but in reality it's one scene, three characters, two environments. But it, like I said, it feels like it could
contained.
Exist. Yeah, it's super, super contained. But it feels like it could exist in TV as much as it could exist in a feature film. Okay.
That makes sense. Absolutely. I mean, with my style, I'm a bit extreme. Like, I don't know when to stop. That's my issue. It's like, I've been in this building till like 4 a.m. Yeah. Just not writing. Just nonstop writing. I'm a big believer on the quantity will lead to the quality. So like in a first draft, I'm thinking this is page negative 110. Yeah. And
wow. Ooh, he's doing features.
That is some honesty.
And then I have to write 110 pages. Now I'm at zero. Wow. Okay, now I know where
you
I want to go.
Gave me anxiety, man. I was like, all right, go on. Yeah.
But like I noticed with the just getting it out there, the quantity has really, then the golden nuggets from the muse or from God, that's when I have my breakout, like, yes, this is gonna work.
Okay. All right, so writer note question. Do you outline or you just start writing?
I do. I love the Dan Harmon story circle. I do heavy outlining.
Okay.
I would say heavy outlining to the point where it starts looking at like a scene by scene outline.
Yeah.
I mean,
where you get stuck is when you do the 50, 60 page treatment.
Correct.
It's just all dense. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Correct.
Of course, when you go to write it, it doesn't match at all.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sure. I mean, it's something that has really helped elevate my writing, thinking about like pitching, how the trailer is going to look like, how the poster is going to look like. And this is a shout out to my great friend Alberto. You take two stark contrasting elements, and then you combine them together. Right. So, like, you look at Bill Hader's Barry. You have one element that's acting, and when acting, that you're supposed to exude, bring out your emotions, and then you have the hitman elements, and the hitman elements you're supposed to repress your emotions. What happens when you combine them together?
A lot of conflict.
You get a really fun TV show.
Yeah.
And already, you see the poster with Bill Hader in the makeup room holding the gun. Even the most iconic scenes in that show is when the acting combined with the hitman elements.
That's character.
That's character. The inciting incident is when Barry discovers acting. So like, go ahead.
No, I still got another question for you then. So with your career as a development exec, when you sit down to write something, can you or do you write something without regard to the marketability of it? Or like, but I know, like, are you thinking somewhere in the back of your mind of like what you can sell or what execs are looking for, you know what I mean? Like, or do you just turn it off and just be like, I'm writing my thing and we'll worry about that later? Do you know what I mean?
No, that's a great question. I get that question a lot. I notice if I'm coming from that place of, oh, this is going to sell,
mm-hmm.
it's not going to be a good script.
Yeah. No, that's what I'm at, because that would kill. I wouldn't would be able it. To... Yeah. If I knew what the conversations execs were having as they're reading scripts, I would never be able to write another thing again, because I don't think I could get that out of my head, and I know it would make the thing worse.
It's an advantage, I feel like. So before I was working with Ben last year, I was living vicariously through Pamela, my producing partner, who used to be a former executive at TV in Paramount. So she always, like, say we come up with an idea, and she'd be like, you know what? Executives are going to hate this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, why? She's like, because we look at it like this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And when I started working, I was like, oh, that bitch was right. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's just like different, you know, it's just different things that they look for. And it's not just as simple as like, this is their mandate or whatever. It's also, say you decide, oh, I want to write this for Melissa McCarthy, for example. The executive is going to be like, Melissa has done that role 4 times. She's not going to want to do it again.
Okay.
You think, okay, I want Melissa because she'd be perfect.
Right, right. Because you've seen her do it. Yeah.
And they're like, we just worked with her on another movie. I'm telling you, she wants to show that she can do something else, right? Yeah. Just as an example. So those are the type of things, as an example, that I'm always like trying to be ahead of the game on.
So that
I'm like, oh, it's not this person. It's somebody like this.
Yeah.
You know, or it's that, but I flipped the character a little bit. You know what I mean? Whatever. So.
Yeah. You know what that makes me think about too is like, you know, when you think about your dream cast and who you'd want, and I think so American Fiction that just came out, Corey Jefferson's movie.
Yeah.
Like, brilliant movie. Mm-hmm. Jeffrey Wright and Sterling K. Brown, fucking phenomenal performances. Who, Jeffrey or Sterling?
Cord.
Yeah. No, man, amazing job. And something he said in a Q&A that really stuck with me, because they're like, you know, how did you get Jeffrey Wright and Sterling K. Brown? And he was like, there are so few roles for actors of color where you get to play a complex, layered character that's this, that's not a thing I've done. And it really made me think, man, because, you know, you think of these name actors that you've seen in big budget things and you're like, well, I'm writing this thing. Man, I could never get them. But it's like, man, if you have a script that's an opportunity for them to do something that you haven't seen them do in the big budget.
Yep.
Like, Cord was like, you know, Sterling said, you know, no, I have to do this role because I don't get a chance to play this kind of character. And I think that's something we have to keep in mind of, like, I'm starting to believe that, you know, you can get people way above who you think you can get in a thing, just because it's like the advantage of racism of where there's nothing else out there for them where you get to be this complex person with these things, where you get to play roles that white actors get.
Well, that's the other that's the other side that I've learned in the last 12 years that we've been working together, me and Pamela, because she's a big casting director. The thing is, you can get people attached to your projects, but it's how you get them attached. So she spends a lot of her time attaching stars in movies, and her name is nowhere in there. They're like, we can't get to such and such because whatever. And she was like, I can get them to take a look at this. So she'll fly to wherever, sit down with, I'm just throwing out a name, such and such actor or actress, and explain to them why they should do the role because they've never done the role before. Right? And she'll, instead of selling the movie, she sells a scene. So it's a moment. So when I'm hiring my crew, it's what I do. It's how I get some top level DP in something, is because I'm like, you know what's missing from your reel? This scene right here. You don't have that. And I'm trying to get them to need to want to do the project. So that they feel it the way that we do. Instead of just going, oh, he's going less on how much I usually make. He's going, fuck, I need to do this project, so I get an action scene that I don't have in my reel, whatever the fuck. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, shit like
And that's the power we have as writers. Like, we create the shit. You know, nothing happens without that. It's just like sketch comedy or improv, you know, without that. Not just, I don't want to demean that whole field, but yeah, I think that's like, it goes to the control thing and coming into our power. And on the subject of Cord, I mean, the thing I really respect about what he did was, you know, this is his directorial debut, right? With a
feature with like a ridiculous cast. I think he's done some cast. Shorts
before, I believe.
Mm. Okay. Who yeah. is that? Leslie Uggams is in it.
It's crazy.
Issa Rae is in it. Yeah. You know, and he was like, yeah, I can't say I'm this big time director, but he's like, this story was, the book spoke so much to his personal experience. Right. He's like, I can communicate the heart of this story
yeah.
to the actors, and mm-hmm. I can write some, you know, mm-hmm. I have a strong script, and I can communicate that. All the other stuff, the camera stuff, the technical stuff, there's like, there's people for that.
Yeah. Here's the lesson yeah. I learned. I had held off directing for a long time. And in 2009, I think I was going back through inside the actor studio.
Mm-hmm.
Penny Marshall, and I'm paraphrasing some of this. Penny Marshall was being interviewed by, what's his name?
James something.
Yes.
Lipton.
Mm-hmm. And he was complimenting her on like Big and all these other movies and stuff she's directed. And she was like, I still don't think I'm all that great.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, I hire somebody else. I hire a great DP.
Yeah.
So what she was saying was, I held off, meaning her. She held off a long time from directing because she didn't think she's not like her brother.
Yeah.
you
yeah,
know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. Gary. So she was like, how am I ever going to do it? And somebody's like, all you have to do is hire the right DP who allows you to be, hey, yeah. bro, I don't really know what I'm doing, mm-hmm. but I trust you to help me.
Mm-hmm.
You need to find somebody who does that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh. Because I was all in my head going, I have to know camera angles. I have to know, yeah. you know, technicals, this. And I was like, I've directed theater. I've choreographed shows. It's another step. Yeah. I could do this.
That's somebody's job.
Yeah.
that you're describing.
And so when I was interviewing DPs, I just told them, bro, I've never directed anything like this.
Mm.
But I know how to work with actors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. yeah.
I need mm-hmm. you to help mm-hmm. me put the camera in the right place. I'm going to have great ideas because I have a great eye. But I need you to elevate it. You know yeah. what I mean? And so I would watch him place where he thought the camera would go. And I would go, good. A little bit that way so we see all the way down the hall. I want to see yeah. texture in the background.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it became stuff like that. And you got to find somebody who allows you to do
and
that.
Then they feel valued because they're able to contribute. Absolutely. And somebody's listening to them.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, I mean, the challenge is, and I'm hoping that this is, I mean, maybe I'll add this to one of my plans is, and that is, finding people who want to be in the same way that we want to be great writers, or we want to be a great director, or we want to be a great producer, or whatever it is that we want to be great at.
Right.
Finding people that want to do that want to be a DP, that want to be an editor, and are willing to put in the effort to become as great at those things.
There's somebody here.
As we want to be the writer, director, producer, whatever element that we want to be right. great at. More often than not, what I find a lot of times in the industry at the level that I'm at, mm-hmm. Unfortunately, which is just starting out, particularly as a director, is that a lot of people, they're like, oh, I will be your DP, I will be your editor, but I'm not an editor. I'm a director, right? And that's fine. I'm not trying to knock them personally, mm-hmm. but I'm trying to find. That's great. I'm glad you're working with me on this project. That's great that you have a directorial eye. That's going to be helpful as we go forward in the process. But what I really want is somebody who's going to grow in the role as a DP that I can do five shorts with.
Mm-hmm.
And every mm-hmm. short, they're going to get better as a DP. I'm going to get better as a director. We're going to develop a shorthand, and we could be a team. You know what I mean? Like if I get a job as like the, or if I'm able to sell a feature and I'm going to direct a feature, I'm coming to you because we work together. We understand one another. We have similar shared tastes or understanding about the very nature of visual storytelling.
You got to put it out there, Ron, like but, you're doing
yeah,
right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. yeah.
But more, like I said, more often than not, when I hear somebody say that when they say I will be your DP, but I'm not a DP. I'm a director.
Right.
What they're telling me is that they're not trying to become the best DP, yeah, which yeah, is yeah. which is what I want. Which yeah. I want to come up with a community of folks. I mean, if
there are a lot of people who just want to be a director or a DP, though.
Yeah, yeah, lots yeah, yeah. I feel you. I just haven't met them. To be perfect.
Technology's changed so much, and everybody can do so many more things for themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
Now you don't just have to just listen to somebody and put the camera in the right
yeah,
place
yeah.
and get the right lens. Now you can actually do it.
Yeah, I heard. I forget who said it, But somebody, again, I'm 90% sure it was probably said on Screenwriters Rant by one of your guests, was that everybody moves to LA, they want to be three things. They want to be a an actor, they want to be a director, or they want to be a producer. Right. You know, now we could add in writer to that because it's come up in cachet a little bit. But it used to be those are like the four things that people wanted to be. Nobody wanted to be the other things because they don't get the glory, they don't get the love. But but they're just as necessary. And to Penny Marshall's point. And many times, you know, there's a reason why, you know, you look at, I'm not going to name the big name directors. I'm not going to put them on blast, but I'm going to go the other way. This is what I was. I went to see at Cinegear at Paramount Lot this past summer. I went to see, I'm forgetting the name of the cinematographer, but it was a cinematographer. Cinegear is like it's a whole expo where they basically demo film cameras, lights, all everything having to do with filmmaking from a physical production standpoint. They're demoing all that, all their gear, all the major producers are. But they had this panel where a very famous cinematographer was sitting there, and he started by. Or the person that was introducing them started kind of running sort of through the Rolodex of this cinematographer's body of work. And I'm sitting there, I had no familiarity with this cinematographer whatsoever. I mean, I think somebody had told me, oh, it was the guy who did such and such movie. And I was like, that movie was not great. I'll hear what my man has to say. Now I can't even say his name. Even if it comes to me, I can't even say it. Anyway, so I'm sitting in the audience and they're going through the work of this guy. And I'm realizing, I'm like, a lot of these so-called directors that I thought were some of my favorite directors, I'm like, no, they weren't my favorite director. This guy was my favorite cinematographer, but I had no idea.
Director gets all the credit.
I had no idea that he was this man was single-handedly responsible for five of like my top 10 movies of all time.
Yep.
And I had no clue. I sat in the audience thinking that this mother brother had just finished Jumanji, and I'm like, come on, man. Right. Like, no offense.
And the directors are auteurs. They use the same DP over and over. Their crew is exactly the same.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Editor, hold on.
Yeah, the directors, like, you know, we have Carl Seton on a lot, you know, on the podcast. And, you know, we talk to him a lot about how he's directing episodic TV. And I always ask him, how do you include your own self, you know, your stamp in somebody else's Chicago Fire or whatever the fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? But he talks about, I remember he gave me an example of one of the shows, I don't know if it was Snowfall or one of the shows he directed, where he was able to do a one-er. And for those of you who don't know, a one-er is when the camera continues, right? And so, because they were like, we don't have the time to do this angle and this angle. He was like, I could do it all in one shot.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, that means you have to choreograph it, though. You know, timing is everything. One little stubble, you have to go back to one and do it all over again. You know what I mean? But, and he saved the day by doing this one-er, and they were like, you're coming back next year. You saved us a ton of time and money. You know what I mean? And so I'm only saying that because that means he has to connect with his DP.
Yeah.
So that they understand each other well enough to be able to get this thing once. You know what I mean? And two takes, you're out. You know what I mean? As opposed to doing seven of them from all the different angles and every different, you know what I mean? So that's a fascinating thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I mean, so yeah, kind of like to that point, like really finding, connecting with people who are truly passionate about the elements of filmmaking that are basically complementing my desires and my passions, right? Like I've already forked out the idea that I want to write and direct, right? Those are the two things.
I have a little short I can give you.
I don't even, and actually
I've never shot.
And as far as like, if I'm directing, I don't even necessarily need to write it. I mean, I would love to just, you know, somebody else direct somebody else's work. I think that would be a great.
There's one person in a dark room, but it's dope.
Yeah. And because when I'm doing my shorts, the thing that I'm trying to excel at it in the moment is directing. I'm not trying to excel as a writer. I'll excel as a writer when with my day job, where people actually pay me money to do it, right? I've already forked that out. Like I don't need another director. I need somebody who's going to be as serious about even ADing, right? You know, wardrobe. You know, all of those things are, you know, production designers, all of those things are as important to the person who is involved in the process as I am invested in becoming a good director. Yeah. And that is kind of like the, I'm shouting out to you, screenwriter rap room community. Hit me up, Rod Johnson on Instagram. I love to collaborate with, you know, I ain't got no money for you.
but that's the sound of everybody puts their phone
down. Yeah, I'm screening, I'm cutting the wheat from the chaff. Exactly. But that's the whole point, is that it's like the goal that I want to do is build community. I just reached out, actually. I didn't reach out. She reached out to me. It was one of the actors from the short film I did. She was like, "Hey, what are you up to? How are you doing? By the way, can I get some of that footage from my reel?" And I was like, "Yeah. I do owe you that." But I was basically telling her, I was like, "These are my plans for this coming year. I want to be shooting on the weekends. It doesn't have to be a full encompassed short. It's just about exploration. It's just about, you know, playing, which is what we do." Mm-hmm. And she was like, "Oh God, community. Like, why would you even wait?" I mean, I was afraid to ask her because the last time we worked together, I paid her some money. So it's like, right. I'm like, we've established a relationship where I've got.
But
like,
if that's it's good,
yeah.
People want to work.
Well, and that's the thing, is that also there's a lot of everybody needs stuff for their it's a content driven industry nowadays, and we need more and more content. Mm-hmm. And it's not to say that you should be telling actors to work for free, but I mean, a lot of actors, they need stuff to continually be sending out to folks about, "Oh, I just shot this thing. It was a little camera test, a little this, that, and the other." And then, maybe their manager's like, "Ah, I don't want to watch this. Okay, it's 2 minutes. Let me see it." Yep. And they're like, "Oh, now I'm seeing my actor in whole new light."
That's
you know?
The point. Mm-hmm.
But it's also, too, it's worth remembering, like, you know, when I started looking into it, I was shocked. Like, even, you know, you can do a SAG production. The day rates are not, you know, for a short film, you're not paying them $10,000 a day. Some of it's like $150, exactly. And then maybe you want to have rehearsals. But it's not out of the realm of possibility to be able to do a SAG thing, where then not only do you appeal to your actors because of the quality of the script, but it's like that's a SAG credit for them. Yeah. And, you know, and that's, I think, again, it's coming from that mindset of like, "Oh, man, I'm just gonna get some, be able to only gonna be able to get students to do it." It's like, no, man, you can get people.
Oh yeah,
who you've seen in stuff. Mm. If you have the right material,
and guess what? You can give them a little more money if you have to.
Yeah, no, exactly.
You can say the job is for $2,500. You know what I mean? Whatever. People will be like, "Oh, I'll do it for 2 days."
No, I think the thing is like what we often lose sight of is that
Black folks.
Quality is a rarity in this town. So if you have the confidence in your writing ability that you can give actors something that's good, like you want to give them something where they could, you know, they went into debt in actor school learning this whole toolbox of tricks, and then they get on an episode of Law and Order SVU and it's just like, "That's my baby," you know. So if you can give them something where they can dip into their toolbox, man, and you're paying them something so it gives them the credit for the thing, and you know, you're good to work with, like, that you're actually offering them a lot.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed. Well, thank y'all, this is fun. That's fine.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming through.
Absolutely.
Hanging out with us, man. I don't want y'all to get no tickets and stuff, so I'm trying to make sure y'all wrap up. I want to take a photo with y'all before you leave. Renee, are you on Twitter, Instagram, anything? Can people follow you?
I'm Renee Rodriguez Lopez at Instagram.
So just your name?
Just my name.
So he branded himself smartly.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
That's where them three names came in handy.
You can also add me on LinkedIn, too. Okay. Same thing, Renee Rodriguez Lopez, right there.
And Karen, I'm just asking because people are going to ask me, can people reach out to you about submitting things at BET to the film, to your department?
Absolutely, yes.
And what department specifically are you in?
I'm BET Plus Manager Content Programming, particularly in the movie division. Okay. Yeah, that's where I work.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where you at, Ra?
I'm at, I said it before, I'll say it again.
Say it again.
never can't say it enough. At Ra Johnson, that's R-A-H Johnson, on Instagram and Threads. I'm not on that other platform anymore.
I don't get Threads. I'm on it, but I have no idea.
I mean, it's fighting for its life. It's in the ring fight. Like, it's like my man over here, you know.
Ali cousin.
Yeah. No. The other fella.
Listen.
Yeah.
The big bear.
But I'm on there. That's a great, probably what that means is that's a great place to engage with me, is because I'm I might be the only one. No. There's plenty of people moving on.
On Threads, you're talking about?
On Threads, yeah. Also on Instagram. So you can find me. Hit me up.
Where you at, my man, Abadou?
Ah, man, you just got to catch me at the Trader Joe's.
You ain't on nothing.
I dropped the social stuff. Like, as soon as Elon bought it, I was like, I'm out.
And, who?
Yeah, right. so, yes, so sorry, y'all. But.
Cool. And I am your host, Hilliard Guest. You guys can find me on Twitter. I say Twitter like I'm cool, even though it's called something else. I'm like, I'm too grown to say X. I'm not saying X. Yeah. It just means a little suspect. Everywhere, at Hilliard Guest, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, Threads. I keep thinking about getting a TikTok just for the sake of an argument.
Oh, man.
Just because I like how people shoot their videos and shit on there.
Yeah.
And then they're able to post it to other places. And I'm like, and I'm starting to do these weekly videos now you probably have seen.
Yeah.
I'm like, maybe I need to do it over there. So anyway, we'll see. We're redoing the website right now. So hopefully in the new year, we're going to come out with a whole new bang, possibly even a new logo. You know, just making some changes and shit. Just want to come out fresh. I'm thinking about slowly down the line, we might be doing this in a room, like video.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I want without the alcohol? I want drink champs.
Oh, shit. All right.
That's what I want. I want the rent room to be like that.
Yeah.
All
right.
You know what I'm saying? And we're all around a big-ass table. We're having fun. We already do it now, but in a situation where you can have four cameras on you, you know what I mean?
Eating fucking hot wings.
Whatever.
Yeah. Progressively hotter hot wings.
Yeah, I don't like hot wings, but you know.
I'll
get the mild ones. Please go on iTunes, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever you guys listen to. Give us a 5-star review. We need that for the metrics. Special shout out to Roadmap Writers for sponsoring the show the last couple months. Thank you guys. We're going to be looking for new sponsors in the new year. So holler at your boy if you guys are interested. We got followers all over the world. The show's been gone 475 episodes. This will be 476.
Congrats.
Thank you. We're going to be taking off for the next 2 weeks. This is going to drop on Monday.
Yeah.
What's Monday, the 18th?
18th,
yes.
Yeah, this is going to drop Monday the 18th. We'll be off until probably the first, second week of January. And we'll be back with all new episodes for your ass. So everybody join me for now. Who knows, we might change it to something completely different than little what we say.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see.
Yeah.
I don't know yet. You know, I got bars like that.
Yeah.
So everybody join me. You guys know how we do it on the Rant Room. On the show, we keep it real. We keep it opinionated. We keep it what, everybody?
2023.
Peace, y'all.
I'ma say what I feel. And I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Rant Room. So you wanna be a writer, well you gotta be a writer till your fears are diminishing, the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed in the rant room. We let that shit up off our chest. You never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the craft of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want.
Welcome to the Rant Room.
Oh yeah.